I'm here in Birmingham with Andrew Winter, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Passport Immigration and Citizenship Agency, also known as PICA. So first and foremost, Andrew, thank you very much for agreeing to meet with me today. I wanted to know a bit about what we're doing here. What is happening at the moment in Birmingham?
Well, the Passport Immigration and Citizenship Agency is doing what we call Access Jamaica. It is part of our strategic diaspora initiative, something which we started around 2 years ago from 2019, where we have decided to reach out to the Jamaicans living overseas to provide them with the services of the agency, which provides passports, citizenship services, as well as immigration status. Because we have found that many Jamaicans living overseas, especially those who have left Jamaica for a long time, are unaware of a lot of the developments and the changes that have taken place in Jamaica. Many of them want to come back to Jamaica. They want to retire there. They want to purchase homes. They want to obtain certain benefits, transact business. And many times they're having difficulties because they don't have any up-to-date Jamaican documentation. Some of them have left Jamaica as far back as 50 years ago, and they would like to have a new passport. So what we have done is we are now, rather than waiting for them to come to us, we are coming to them. We have reached out into the communities overseas, and they are now providing them with these services. Even though we have the missions through our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the High Commissions, the embassies, sometimes it is a challenge for persons to go to those places to get the information and sometimes to process their documents. It takes a very long time and they are having some serious challenge. So in responding to those challenges, we have decided to come out. We can deal with the issues right there and then and treat with them. And we have found it has been so well accepted, so appreciated. We have done it in Toronto, Canada, Hartford, Connecticut, Fort Lauderdale, Atlanta, and Orlando. Everywhere there are large bodies, pockets of Jamaicans overseas. And we have seen where people from the 60s, in fact, to yesterday, there was a man who has been in the UK since 1959. And he came to get his passport done. And he's like, you know, he can't believe it.
So tell me something about this man then. What's his story?
Well, he came up on his parents. He came up with his parents in 1959, and he came up as a child. And at that time, you had a kind of Jamaican passport, but it was like, I think it says British Overseas Territory at the time, because we weren't independent. We were a part of the British Empire. So he came up on that passport, and now he has been living here all his life, and then he wanted to find out if he can now get back his own Jamaican passport.
How old was he when he came to the UK?
Around six.
Okay, so he's a young child, and as we've heard in other interviews that we've done, that children would come on their parents' passport. But then have no documentation
and
of their
that's
own.
He had no documentation until he got his British passport. So when he became an adult, and then now he would like his Jamaican passport. And once we got his Jamaican birth certificate and everything, he was able to obtain back his Jamaican passport on his own for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was just so overwhelmed. And these are the things that makes this kind of event so special. Because in fact, even today as we speak, there, just as you came and saw me, there were two couples there, and they just brought in their grandparents, right? And these people have probably been in the UK from in the 40s or the 50s, and they are now making sure that their children and their grandchildren obtain Jamaican citizenship. I guess you could say that they are part of this generation that came from way back, came into the UK right shortly after the war to help rebuild the UK. But they are now ensuring that their generations, and we are so happy to be here to know that we can facilitate. And they have brought all their documentation, their birth certificate.
What specific documentation are you asking them to provide? Right. I know there are different cases.
But all right, so for the grandmother, she has to bring her Jamaican birth certificate. Then we have to look at her children to make sure her name is on her children's British birth certificate, and the grandchildren have, so we can establish that lineage back to her, so that they are known as Jamaica. They would obtain citizenship by descent. So they're getting their Jamaican citizenship by virtue of their grandparents and them being descendants of Jamaicans. And with that now, those grandchildren and children can obtain Jamaican passports. Right? So it helps so them to reconnect. And we have found that is so important to them. And many people have been up here, quite a number of them are now reaching retirement age. In fact, there was a gentleman here this morning, he's 72. He said he's going back to his friends and telling them all about it. You know, and this is what makes this so important. And, you know, as they have transitioned through, they are now reaching retirement, they own property in Jamaica. Some of them want to come back home to Jamaica and do business in Jamaica. And by having their Jamaican passport, it makes their life that much easier.
And for the perhaps older people that you've spoken to, have they been to Jamaica at any point?
A few of them, they've been to Jamaica. Some of them been there like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and they want to go back. But what happened is once you land with your British passport, your land, we treat you like a British national, mm-hmm. so you're only there for 6 months. Many of them want to spend years, they just want to retire. Some of them have wanted to do their pension transfer, so they want to live there. They want to come out of the cold. Right? They'll say, I've had enough of the cold. So we can understand that. And
so how do people react then when they arrive in Jamaica? Do some people arrive in Jamaica and think that they can stay and then find out that they have to?
Yeah, well, after 6 months, if you land on your British passport,
you have to leave.
You have to leave, or we give them an extension of stay. And because we know some of them are Jamaicans, we tend to give them, they can get what is called unconditional landing, which will allow them to remain there as long as they want.
And is that a stamp
in the British passport?
And you give this stamp to, as I understand it, to people who are of Jamaican descent
and Jamaicans.
But they're not in possession of a Jamaican passport.
Okay. In fact, this morning a lady got it and she cried. No, I'm serious. She cried. Because she was so happy and know that she can travel to Jamaica, you know, without any issues at all. So when you see these things happen, and when we growing up in Jamaica, we hear the various, we don't have I don't think there's Jamaican in Jamaica today who doesn't have a relative who is not either in Canada, the US or the UK, or have not migrated at some time. So we are all familiar with, you know, a lot of the stories about our relatives. I had uncles who worked in the British Railway. And so we know that many of them have transitioned and have worked very hard in the British, to help to build the British society. So to get them a chance and their children and grandchildren to help to build the Jamaican society, I mean, we are very happy and pleased to facilitate that. And that's why we actually invite, like, Jamaica National, VMBS.
What's VMBS, please?
Victoria Mutual Building Society is like a bank.
Okay.
And Jamaica National is like a bank as well. And this time we have the Registrar General Department. Right. So, like, Jamaica National, Victoria Mutual Building Society, which are financial institutions in Jamaica. This allows persons now, if they want to get their pensions and if they want to do financial transactions and remit money to Jamaica, it's easy for them. And when they go to Jamaica now, because they have an account and they have a bank card, they can just withdraw money. It allows them to purchase property easier and acquire other assets in Jamaica much easier. The other thing too is that the Registrar General Department, they deal with marriage certificate, birth certificates, and other deed poll and other identity documents which are required to have passports and what is. Because one of the things we have found, many Jamaicans came to the UK on a document called a certificate of birth. It's not your birth certificate, it's just a document which you got at the hospital, which says that you were born and your date and everything.
I love that concept because it's the certification that you exist.
This, yes.
But you, we know you your, exist because we can see you, right. But it's not an official registration.
So many of them have come, and because the registrar general is here today, they are now applying for their Jamaican birth, proper birth certificate, for the first time. And these are documents which are critical to them. Critical to them in so many ways. And
so here in Birmingham, what are kind of the main problems that come up, the main stumbling blocks that you find?
So some of the issues that many Jamaicans have is they don't have the proper documentation, especially those who came to the UK in the 50s and early 60s. They didn't come on the birth certificate.
So you're talking specifically about people who were called the Windrush generation.
The Windrush, they came in the 50s and the 60s. They would be the Windrush generation, because some of them even didn't even require passports at that time,
mm-hmm.
to come to the UK. They just bought a ticket, joined the ship, and they came with the documents. So for some of them, they are now obtaining their documents now for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting their birth certificates properly, they're getting their passports now, and really establish back themselves that link to Jamaica. And it is so important. We feel very good to know that we are contributing to them, because some of them, you know, they've just felt lost without it. And now the fact that they can regain it and their children are now properly benefiting from all of that. Because it was a very unfortunate thing for those, well, we heard about it in Jamaica, what happened with the Windrush generation and some of the issues. My agent, this agent in particular, how we assisted was that many of them who may have retired or came back to Jamaica, we had to assist in locating them, ensuring that they had their passports, got their documentation, and providing our Ministry of Foreign Affairs, who would then report back well and give an account for those persons.
So let's explain that process then. I was recently in Jamaica, and I went to Open Arms Development Centre, which is one of the places that receives young people, well, anybody really, but anybody who's been deported from the UK.
Well, they would prefer to call them irregular removed migrants, IRMs. Involuntary
Involuntary removed migrants. And part of that process is to ensure that these people can access their Jamaican documentation. Right. Were they entitled to that? So what kind of involvement then has PICA had, or does it continue to have, to support, for example, mm-hmm. people who might find themselves, have come from overseas, maybe the US or Canada or the UK, and are in Jamaica and would need access to these kind of services?
All right. Where PICA is very important is from two perspectives. One, we have had where persons, for example, I think with the change in with the British law, I think in the 1980s, where if your parents were in the country illegally,
mm-hmm.
and you were born in the UK, you didn't have right of abode. I think they had changed the law. So what that does, these persons, if they are removed from the UK, even though they are born here, and I'm not sure, I think the citizenship law speaks more specific to that. What we have to do when they are brought to Jamaica is we have to provide them with their Jamaican citizenship and give them their Jamaican passports.
And what does that process entail then, the provision of Jamaican
citizenship? So, first they'd have to get their parents' birth certificate. Then they have to bring their certificate of birth, which they were issued here in the UK when they were born. And then once they bring those documents, they apply for their Jamaican citizenship. And once they approve that citizenship by descent, then they can apply for their Jamaican passport.
Okay. So that is a process that might sound straightforward, as a straightforward kind of bureaucratic exercise, but in reality,
there are issues sometimes, because sometimes the parent's name might not be spelled properly. Sometimes the information that is provided is, you need to validate that information. And again, where the challenge is, if the father didn't have a proper Jamaican birth certificate, so they have to go to the Registrar General Department, get the document from them, then they can apply. Because sometimes, as I said, many of these persons from Jamaica, they did not come up necessarily with a proper birth certificate. Mm. They came up with a document that said certificate of birth. Some of them probably didn't come up with, they bought a ticket and joined the boat and come to Jamaica, come to the UK. And we have to re-establish back all of those.
And have you had situations in which people don't see themselves as Jamaican at all?
Yes, especially though they're born here. They're born here, they grew up here for 30 years. And, I mean, they have no connection whatsoever with Jamaica. All right? So they are now in Jamaica, and we have to assist them as best as possible.
What do you think about that situation?
It's unfortunate, but every country has its laws, and I think we just need to exercise some discretion. And we had a particular case in Jamaica where there was a gentleman who came up during the Windrush time, and he was here for like 40 years. He came back to Jamaica, and he was not allowed to return
to the UK.
To the UK.
And who was stopping him from returning to the UK? Was it
the British, the UK government said he can't come back. Anyway, it went in the press, it was in the media, it was in the Gleaner. And eventually, I think the matter came and the Home Office allowed him to return. So we have to assist those persons in any way we can, because at the end of the day, especially if they are the Jamaicans, we remember we got a specific request from our Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So they wanted us to find out if any of the persons in Windrush was deported to Jamaica, and we had to participate in that exercise, because as the agency, we are responsible for the Jamaicans, to process the Jamaicans who are deported from any foreign country.
And what was the outcome of that exercise?
I think we found maybe 2 or 3.
So very low numbers.
Very low numbers.
And was that, what year was that
exercise? That was in like 2017.
Okay. So you looked specifically...
we got a specific request to find out, because they sent out some information to us, and we had to check if any of these persons. And there were also, we had to check if any persons who came back to Jamaica were part of, because they submitted a list to us, and we had to check that list against our border system information to find out if there are. And they did find some of them who had actually retired and are living in Jamaica. I think there was some benefit or some compensation, so they had to be tracing a lot of those. So we found quite a few of them, and those, I don't remember the exact number, to be honest.
That's okay.
It was some time ago, and we provided that information to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
I'm sorry, this compensation was coming from
the British government.
The British government. So was that part of the Windrush compensation scheme?
I think so. Yes. Okay. I think so.
So what liaison then did you have, a speaker had with the British government? Or
no, it does. Everything went through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Okay, and they worked specifically with the British High Commission?
They worked with the High Commission.
Who worked with the British Home Office. Okay.
And sorted all of that out.
Have you had any direct involvement with, for example, anybody from the Home Office? Have they visited Jamaica or looked at the facilities?
The only time we have any direct relationship, we have a program going with the Home Office here where we actually have an immigration officer from PICA who is assigned to the Jamaican High Commission, who for the last 3 years, anyone who has been returned to the country, they have to do the vetting and check-in to make sure that they're actually Jamaicans and that all their documentation is in place before they're actually returned to Jamaica.
Okay, so you have a representative from PICA working at the moment at the
Jamaican High Commission
in
who liaisons with the Home Office directly as it relates to any issues with.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. Have you had any cases of anybody who from any other country who's in Jamaica as well? Because I know there's a high level of people from the UK, Canada and the US, but mm-hmm. have you had any issues of people, I don't know, but coming from other places?
End up in Jamaica, being deported to Jamaica?
Yeah.
Not that I'm aware of, not from, because we have a very strict screening process. The process is that if they want to deport somebody, they have to send the information to us. We then have to verify and validate, and we have to go into the communities to confirm that this person was actually mm-hmm. born in Jamaica. Right? I think save and except those, because of the nationality issues, who they would get the nationality of their parents, those now will get the citizenship by descent. But I can't recall anyone of another nationality.
Mm. And so before somebody's deported then, PICA is
we have to sign up,
process.
Yes, and we have to sign
so
up.
So you know how many people have come in, for example. Okay, and that's verified. What about, so that may, the process is clear for people who were born in Jamaica, but what about those people who were born in the UK? Does that further complicate?
Well, I think what there's a process now, because recently we haven't seen anything like that, but I think there's a process now where they appeal their cases and it's going through appeal. So we haven't seen any of that recently.
Okay. Well, talk us through what's happening here today in Birmingham, because you've got a really, it's a big operation that's going on. It's quite impressive. Mm-hmm. Talk me through the setup, right? Imagine that I've come here to say that I think that I have a claim to Jamaican citizenship and I would like to find out more information. What would the process be?
All right. What we have actually done is brought the PICA operation that we have in Jamaica here in Birmingham. So we have actually approximately 20 staff here. We have brought up persons to process persons for citizenship. We have brought up persons for passport. We have brought up our investigation team to, if they want to help and assist persons who may have lost their passports. And we are also doing photographs, anything that is required to assist persons in the process. So we have brought our Jamaican operations here. So if you, for example, came in and you have heard that your father was a Jamaican and you'd like to now become a citizen of Jamaica, we have the forms here. You can take the photographs, and as long as you bring all the documentation that is required. We have brought up our own notary officials. We call them justice of the peace. Once we verify the information and you have appeared before us, then now you can actually start the process to obtain your Jamaican citizenship, and you can actually apply for your passport at the same time. Many Jamaicans who, as I said before, who did not have their passports before, right,
mm-hmm.
they now can, if they have lost their passport, if they have lost their passport and they want to replace it, we can do that for them. If they want to renew their passport, even though they haven't renewed it in the last 40 years, we are here today.
So you have people who are bringing passports from the 1960s, 70s?
Yes, 1962.
What's the oldest one that you've seen?
The oldest one I've seen is 1969.
Okay.
right? And you know, it does blow me away.
Well, tell me about the differences now between the because we know that you know things are being processed much more. Mm-hmm. May I say efficiently, right? There's been fundamental changes to the ways in which people are obtaining their documentation, and that's being processed. So what?
Well, one other thing, first time our passports used to be handwritten. Now our passports, they go through, just like the British passport, they go through, there are no machinery double passports. And
is that machinery here? Did you bring it here?
No, we didn't bring that here. Everything has to go back to Jamaica to be processed. Okay. We have come a long way with the production facilities, and very soon we'll actually be migrating to e-passports like the UK. So we'll have e-passports as well. In fact, by 2023, early 2023, we should be transitioning over to e-passports. So many of the Jamaicans, their passports are handwritten and the pictures were pasted in. They are now seeing different pictures integrated in the page, and everything is printed out properly, laser engraved. So they have seen a lot of development. Mm. We had an old blue book, hardcover book. Our passport is a dark blue passport, closely resembling the same color of the American passport. And it's all the features of a modern travel document. So, you know, it's ironic. When the people get back their passports, they feel so good. You know, they've gotten back that little piece of Jamaica. Yeah.
How did you become involved with PICA? What was your kind of career trajectory?
Actually, I was in the private sector. I used to work I was head of security.
Head of security
for Grace Kennedy for a while. And then, actually, I entered into the public sector as the senior director for investigation and surveillance. So I was in charge of that unit that used to have to do the investigations and the verification of Jamaicans who were being deported, whether we're coming from the UK or Canada or the USA. We had to verify their nationality. I was in that position for about 4 years, and then I was promoted to the
people being deported from the UK to
UK to Jamaica, Canada to Jamaica, no, USA to Jamaica. So I was in that role, and I liked that role because it gave me the opportunity to learn everything about the agency's operation. And then I was promoted in 2016 to the role of the chief executive officer. So with that knowledge, it really helped me. And it was coming out of that background that one of the initiatives we really wanted to do was to help the Jamaicans in the diaspora, because seeing the problems and the challenges they had.
And what would be the main challenges that a person from the Jamaican diaspora would be experiencing?
A lot of them is because they don't have their Jamaican passport, they want to buy property. They want to do banking, they want to do business in Jamaica.
So these are things that very much kind of private sector business like focus, which obviously has a benefit, right, for Jamaica.
It helps to grow the Jamaican economy.
And also the involvement of the banks and
the banks,
help with pensions.
That's all
very important. What impact does it have on, or what importance does it hold for an everyday person? Okay, for maybe somebody who isn't there to invest, but what value, you told me earlier.
Well, it's a form of Jamaican identification, because many times when they're doing other things, they want a driver's license. That Jamaican passport is their form of national identification, because Jamaica, you can have your driver's license, your voter's registration, and your passport. And in many instances, because they do live in Jamaica, they don't have the voter registration, they don't have the driver's license, but they can get their passports.
And tell me about the national ID card. How does that
Well,
fit
that
into?
That is something that is now to be rolled out very soon, and that will be another form of identification.
So was there no, it's called NIDS, right? NIDS. Is there no, was there no national identity card before?
No, the only form of, the only identity document that you could have from birth to 18 was your passport.
Right, okay.
Everything else came after 18. Your voter's registration, your driver's license, but anything between 0 and 18, only a passport.
Was that inherited from the British model then? Because in the UK, there's been historically quite a pushback against introducing a national ID card for UK citizens. And part of it is, part of it is very different, right, to our neighbours in Europe, for example, where it, in France, in Spain, where a national ID card is very, very standard. And I just wondered if that's, links back to maybe the colonial relationship.
I really don't know. In fact, I know the push has been for us because the Jamaica, we need to, outside of your passport, what's the other form of national identification? So I'm not sure what is the genesis. It is actually something that they have wanted to start from as far back as 1974, but we have just never gotten around to it. And finally, the government has decided to push forward ahead with it.
So legal identity documents, for example, so something that you would use at PICA to confirm someone's identity would be their driver's license, voter registration, passport, anything else?
And the birth certificate, they must have the birth certificate.
But from the UK, from wherever?
Wherever. The birth certificate for the Jamaicans who are born in Jamaica. You have your citizenship certificate, and those documents, when they are authenticated, would be the breeder documents that would support your application for a Jamaican passport. And that is what we would use to issue a Jamaican passport.
You tell me about the e-passports then, this new system. Well, exciting system that's coming.
The UK has the e-passport. We are getting the e-passport, which basically is again, a much more robust document, identity document. Your identity is now in a digital form and it's stored on a chip, along with what is on in the machine readable zone. And that is now improving the strength of our passport and to make it a much stronger identity document as well as a travel document, and it's bringing us in line with the rest of the world. I mean, approximately 200 countries have gone e-passport, and we haven't gone to the same level of the British, where they have the polycarbonate page which has the embedded chip. We are not sure if the British passport you use finger.
So biometrics,
right. Our one is still facial.
Facial biometrics, so facial recognition.
Facial recognition.
Okay. Can I ask, I apologise about the banging, we have some building work going on. So who's helping you with that? Is this being outsourced to any private companies?
Yeah, Canadian Banknote provides us Jamaica with our passport.
The Canadian Bank?
Canadian Banknote. That's a company that...
Canadian Banknote.
No, right. Okay. They provide passports for us.
Okay.
So they are the persons who are helping us to migrate to e-passports.
And that's a mammoth operation, right, to install. Mm-hmm. So because of the... also because of the huge influx of tourists that you get. So you would have... How many major... airports are
we have three international airports, two major and one minor. So for the Jamaicans, it's not, we have just over nearly 3 million Jamaicans who are eligible for passports. But what we have to do is have a proper border management system to process the volume of tourists coming to the country, which I must say since the pandemic has started to recover and is recovering quite well. So, I mean, reading the e-passports for the UK, well, we're modernizing our border management system to treat with that. But the Jamaican passport now, making it e, is also bringing us in line with the UK requirements too. Because in the UK, they now have facilities to read both e-passport.
So how much engagement does PICA have with the UK High Commission in Kingston?
We have quite a bit. One of the things the British High Commission, the government, has helped us. We have implemented a document forensic lab, which helps us to identify fraudulent documents.
Okay, that's... So how does that process work?
For example, we know that there are a lot of forged travel documents. People use forged birth certificates, for driver's license.
What would be the motivation for doing that?
Again, to reduce the vulnerability of our document or any attempt by persons to use fraudulent documents.
I think the question is, why would a person travel on a false document? Why would they?
Well, you have human smuggling, human trafficking, persons, and even Jamaica. You have persons who try to smuggle Jamaicans. And to smuggle a person or traffic a person, many times they're traveling on fraudulent documents. Mm-hmm. So it's very important for us to be able to identify those fraudulent documents and to put a dent and prevent any trafficking or smuggling. Because if your country is recognized as a country that facilitates human trafficking, it impacts your rating. I think if you're a tier one or a tier two country for trafficking, it even affects your passport mm-hmm. and your travel documents.
And at present, when people arrive in Jamaica, so for example, if they arrive in Kingston, the process is it's the old process, right, of walking up to an immigration officer.
We have two things. You can go through our automated border kiosk.
Which is for, is that correct? Is that for CARICOM?
For everybody.
For everybody.
Everybody. Okay. And you can go to an officer. So we have some level of automation now, which will be expanding shortly. And we have the standard officer who does the inspection of your passports.
Okay. So what involvement has the... You said the High Commission, they...
Yes, they actually... They provided the funding.
So what... Do you know what funding that was? Was that...
They provided us funding through the FCDO, the Foreign Commonwealth Development Office. And I think the Document Forensic Lab was through the Immigration International part of the Home Office.
Mm.
Right? And as I said, we have the immigration person assigned to the Jamaican, which is part of our project with the UK government in terms of ensuring that the whole compliance of persons being removed from the UK to Jamaica, persons are fully compliant, all the documentation is right, all the information. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these things were close to the British government.
And when would PICA meet with the British High Commission, for example? Are there specific meetings or working groups or teams
for various things. For example, sometimes we might, our investigation and surveillance unit team work closely with the British High Commission. And they meet with us from time to time to discuss if there are issues or challenges. So, for example, they might receive a Jamaican passport. They might ask us to verify or confirm that this is what genuinely issued by the agency.
Mm-hmm.
We also meet with them for various things, for various issues which might occur. We might have a British national who might need to be removed from Jamaica, or for them to issue a travel document. So we meet with them intermittently. In fact, one of the things they've done recently too is provided quite a bit of training for our staff at the PICA in terms of document identification, fraudulent document identification.
And would that be people who've come over from the UK to give workshops?
Work persons will come over, and we have had a situation where a few persons in PICA have been sent to the UK to the training.
Oh, tell me more about that. I'm interested in.
Yeah, man, they do. We sent officers to the National Document Forensic Lab up here, and they have received training, advanced training on how to identify fraudulent documents, you know.
So the concern, the main focus is on fraud.
Fraud and fraudulent
documents.
It's not
on, for example, helping, for example, Jamaicans like you're doing today, for example.
No,
access,
that's
something completely separate.
This is entirely our own. This is the government.
So what would be the main concerns, do you think, of the British government in terms of documentation issues? So we've said fraud already, helping to, and helping with better... Well, maybe the acquisition of e-passports or kind of better equipment machinery that helps
the reading of and the processing of passports. The one of the areas that they help we work closely with them is especially in terms of identifying any suspected travelers or assisting to track persons. But I think the primary thing, though, is the trying to ensure that persons who may have been deported from the UK for any reason or nobody who is of interest is not shipped back to the UK or their ability to travel.
Right.
So though we work closely with them because, the travel advisories. So that is something that we work closely with the British High Commission on.
And how do you see that situation of people who, they might not have a legal right, for example, to remain in the UK, but the push basically of the UK to effectively ensure that these people can't return, right? So they are deporting people from the UK and sending them, I don't like this terminology, but sending them back, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea that the UK is expulsing people who have a criminal record, people who might have mental health issues, or people who have not, people who are undesirable, basically, for the UK to keep. How do you see that as in terms of the impact that has on Jamaica?
Well, the simple fact is that every country has the right to ensure that their citizens are protected and not facing any undue risk. So whether it's Jamaicans or any country and they come to live and remain here to go to school or raise families or do business, the government of the UK has to ensure that those persons can live without fear of doing business or anything. So if Jamaicans are undesirable, but they're self on the opposite side of the law, and the offence that they committed is one that will cause it to be deported, can't argue with that.
Okay, so... But
what we do, what I would say is that it's important that we do have abuse of the process, and I think that is the important thing.
So... The setup we said today has been really ambitious. It looks like it's going brilliantly. You said that you've already had multiple operations that have taken place across Canada, the US. Is this your first visit to the UK then?
First visit to the UK.
So what's your initial impression then of how it's going?
It started off a little slow, but today certainly we have seen a much more, it has picked up quite a bit. And so we have a registration site and we have over 800, just about 800 persons have registered on the site.
Well, I think today.
I think we're going to London. I think both of them is going to be in London when we go to London.
And I would imagine that people here might talk to family members and say and it went really well. So the numbers would
start building up.
Because Monday and Tuesday you're in Birmingham and then Thursday and Friday you'll be...
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Saturday you'll be in London. So that's a considerable amount of people already.
And the important thing is that they are very appreciative of it.
Yeah, and how many people have you not registered? Have people come and they found out they need additional documentation?
I don't have an exact percentage, but right now if we have 800 people registered, we'll probably see another 800 who haven't registered to come.
Yeah,
so we might end up with around 1,200 persons being processed, which is good. But what we have already been hearing is, so when are you coming back?
And how many minors have you had? How many young people?
I'd say quite a bit. for the last, a lot of persons have brought their children here.
Have you found families coming?
Families,
together?
In fact, we had three families yesterday who came. But one of the things I have found, and I'm not sure how this is managed, trying to get the information into the diaspora. I think that has been our biggest challenge.
And that was the question, essentially, that I had for you about communications, right? How much have you been in contact with, well, I presume you've been in regular contact with your PICA representative at the Jamaican High Commission, but what strategy, what plan has been behind getting the message out?
We have gotten it on social media, Facebook, FaceTime, Twitter, Instagram, and gotten it out there. We have gotten on the downtown short interviews on BBC. I did one for BBC Midlands. And we tried to get the information out there.
Was that on the radio or the television?
I am not sure. They called me. I think FaceTime. Don't know if it means I should, you know, but I saw it as I did mostly radio interviews. You know, and one of the things that in America and Canada, it was very clear we were the Caribbean radio stations, but we weren't as familiar with them here.
Why?
Because I think that is something that why we're even doing this Access Jamaica. Because, for example, here in Birmingham, it is since arriving, talking to the people, they've said, Mr. Winter, you need to speak to this radio station and this radio station. You find that at the High Commission level and the official level, let's stick to the official. But learning how the churches play a very important role.
So as we know, Seth George Ramakan, yeah, who I also interviewed for these oral history interviews, is a preacher. Mm-hmm. So he was a High Commissioner but also a preacher. So that was an interesting story
and
here.
It is very big.
Yeah.
And we have found that getting the information into the churches, that is what has gotten it out into the diaspora in the UK.
I also think, though, that people who've had a positive experience with PICA, mm-hmm, will also, you know, that's something they're going to tell their friends and their neighbours and their families about.
That is true.
So it's kind of going to have this snowball momentum to it. How did this come about, then? What was the conversation? Why did you prioritise the need to start, so not for people to come to PICA, but for PICA to come to the people, really?
Well, we PICA has, as an agency, one of our requirements that we earn our own revenue. So we need to earn revenue. So it's important to look at the marketplace. Mm. Our marketplace will be the Jamaican diaspora.
But you say that, but the prices are relatively cheap. Could you talk us through the prices to get...
Well, the prices are set by the government.
Yeah, but they're not high, are they? How much was it for a Jamaican
For the what we're charging now is $110 to do your renewal, and that costs include the courier price to send it back to you. So
when you compare that with the prices of getting British documentation...
How much is a British passport?
A British passport, I can't tell you off the top of my head, but it's a lot more than £110. Yeah. So I just think the comparison of... and also there's a backlog at the Home Office at the moment, so there are Brits who are not getting their passports quickly. Efficiently.
Right.
Also, the Home Office has introduced a new... a rule that says if you have dual nationality that you have to submit your British passport and your original passport as well, which means that people who are trying to renew their passports have no documentation. So there's a lot of these things. What I find fascinating about our conversation today is seeing the discrepancies really in the different services that are being offered. And also,
well, what they have just said is interesting, because that is something that clearly we need to follow up on, and because if you have your dual nationality, it's important that you have a proper travel document or a passport to support.
Well, remember that people in the UK, so Jamaicans in the UK or people of Jamaican descent in the UK, were being asked to regularise their status.
So, right.
And a lot of people who were caught up in the Windrush scandal found themselves without the documentation or being found themselves challenged by the Home Office, and the regularisation costs have skyrocketed, are in the thousands. So it's not just For somebody to regularise it as a British citizen, but also to register their children.
Right.
So I think it's very interesting to see the huge differences between the prices, basically.
And once you have regularised your status and your children's status with getting a Jamaican documentation, that is what would help you know with your on the British side.
Mm.
Okay.
And I spoke in an oral history interview to Jennifer Housen, who was extremely knowledgeable on this subject because she's an expert in immigration and citizenship law.
Right.
So she's far more articulate than I would be than to talk through this process.
Yes.
But it's very interesting, I think, to think about the some of the issues, right, that people who are living, who are essentially transnational people, so living this existence between the UK and Jamaica, and thinking about how these things connect as well in terms of.
Well, I think, in fact, one of the challenges we have had with, like, for example, the British birth certificate, is anyone who wants to amend that record, they might say, "No, my name was not Andrew; it was Andre." But on that national document, it says Andrew.
They're spelling mistakes.
And they said when you take it back, it's like getting the document corrected. It's easier to knock down a building. You know, so you wonder why.
So I wanted to ask you about the Windrush scandal itself.
Mm-hmm.
How much did... I mean, was that something that you heard about in Jamaica? Was it something that was talked about in meetings that Fika had with the British High Commission? Was it seen as being connected to the work of Fika?
The Windrush scandal, when it emerged, I think around in 2018.
It was 2018.
2018, when it emerged, it did not come directly to Fika at first, because it was viewed, this was really the Jamaicans who migrated to the UK, who were to have been landed, and it was their immigration status in the UK which was mostly affected. As I indicated earlier, how Pika became involved is that for those who didn't have any documentation and needed now to get their Jamaican passport and formalize, then we were brought into the process to help with that regularization process because of how some of these persons came on the Windrush generation to the UK. Now, subsequent to that, we helped the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Most of it was managed through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, who would send requests to us.
What specifically were those requests?
The request is to, like, verify the person's identity, check if any persons came from the UK, where they have, they, you know, returned to Jamaica. Were there any persons who were in the Windrush who were deported to Jamaica? So we now had to do our checks and to support now the government's position on these persons who were being impacted. I mean, we heard a lot about it. We heard that because these Jamaicans who were on the Windrush and they didn't have any status, it suddenly affected the status of their children and their grandchildren in the UK. So anything we could do to verify identity of the Jamaicans and ensure that, yes, I mean, we wouldn't have any records from 1948 because our 1945, we got that time Jamaica was even a British colony, so we wouldn't have, but certainly by 2018, anybody who traveled to Jamaica, we would have started to have some kind of information on these persons, so at least we could say, yes, these persons did come back to Jamaica, these persons haven't returned, and we could check our passport issue and system to say, yes, these persons have Jamaican passports. So it was really from that perspective that we participated in the whole Windrush issue and how we could help to or help Jamaicans, any one of them from that generation that needed to get themselves regularized. Because some of them for years, decades, didn't have a passport.
Mm.
And, you know, our ability to give them a Jamaican passport after all this time was good.
Mm. And you said the reactions of people who have attended.
It has just been awesome. Persons are really happy. They're really thankful for the service. And as I said, they have asked us to come back again. And I think we are helping to close. And in fact, I mentioned something earlier, that if the Home Office and their British, to get their British passport is a challenge. So, and persons don't like to be without a passport. So they know that you can get another passport.
Mm.
I guess it has meant a lot for them.
Has it had any, are there anything that's happened in the UK that has had a negative impact on people that you've seen in your line of work?
I think a lot of them are probably concerned about the whole Brexit and the uncertain future of certain aspects of the country. I think that is what has impacted some of them. A lot of them have said that they're interested in investing back in Jamaica because, you know, they can't earn money through investment, rent house, or do anything. But quite a lot of them have said, look, we need to get our house in order to come home.
Mm.
So, you know, those are all the things that, you know, we know we can help with.
Yeah. So is there anything, as we're wrapping up the interview, is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Well, you know, speaking to you, I'll be very frank, has really brought this whole Windrush thing into sharp perspective for me. And, you know, I know we didn't contribute as directly, but clearly the impact of it is far-reaching, and maybe even some of what we are seeing out there is as a result of this. We didn't see the connection before, but it probably drives now persons in their mind, I need to establish some kind of safety net. And the best way to have my safety net is to get back my Jamaican passport, get back my Jamaican identity. These people are here to do this for me. Let me get on board. I've seen the age of a lot of these people.
Have some people been hesitant about it?
Well, we have heard that a few have been hesitant, but you see them coming out and they're saying, look, we need to get back our Jamaican identity too, for whatever reason. They just want to know them have their Jamaican passport. And maybe this is some of the things that are driving it. Right? So, we are here to assist. And what I will also say, it helps in many ways, because even if the Home Office, you have your passport, you have your British passport, you have your proper documentation. So if you want residency or something, at least you have a proper document to show the authorities so you can regularize your status in the UK. And that is important.
Mm. And how do you think the efficiency of the system has improved in recent years?
For us, significantly. In fact, within 25 working days, many of them will get back their passport.
Yeah. It's quicker than in the UK.
No, I'm very happy for that. I mean, people have told me in the UK it's taking 6 months. We are doing it much quicker than that.
Well done. Right, fantastic. Thank you. I've really enjoyed our talk today.
Yes, I did as well. And, you know, I'm certainly going to look for one of your books and read about this whole thing.
Thank you. Because
I'm a history buff, so knowing this history is a critical part of our history. And it's not something that we need to forget, but we need to learn from it.
Right, fantastic. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.